where Stamford comes for news and talk. The Lisa Wexler Show, now on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
Not only me, I think we, all over the world, all the countries have to be worried. Because you know that it can be not real information, but it can be true. Because when they begin to speak about one or another battles or involves enemies or nuclear weapons or chemical weapons, they should do it. They could do it. I mean, so they can. For them, life of the people is nothing. That's why we should think, not be afraid. I mean, that not be afraid, be ready. But that is not the question to Ukraine, and not only for the Ukraine, for all the world. I think so.
There is a possibility of them using these weapons.
And that is a little bit of President Zelensky, who was speaking in English and then switched to Ukrainian. And he was talking about the very real possibility, which I think, frankly, he's saying what everybody is thinking already, which is that Putin is not going to be deterred by the possibility that nuclear weapons are going to be received by the world in a very negative way. He's not going to be deterred. He's going to use them if he needs to use them, if he feels that he should use them. I don't really think anybody is going to argue with President Zelensky on that point. You might have heard over the weekend that the Moskva was sunk. That was the flagship. That's a very big morale boost to the Ukraine effort. And a very, if the Russians find out about it, and who knows if they will, that would be very tough for the morale of the Russian people. But the Moskva was sunk. There were about 500 crew on board. It is estimated that most of them were able to get away alive, although dozens have been reported killed. What was very concerning is that it had at least two nuclear weapons on board the ship, and nobody really knows what happened to them. Nobody knows if they were successfully, you know, de-detonated or de-weaponized, or if they sunk to the bottom of the sea, or if they exploded in the hail of explosions that sunk the ship to begin with. I've been looking for information about what happened to these nuclear weapons. I can't find it yet. And probably the people that know about it don't want the rest of the world to know exactly what happened. We'll be more frightened than we already are. But you know that ever since the beginning of this war, which is now going into its eighth week, the Russians have flirted with nuclear catastrophe from the very beginning. One of the first things they did was invade Chernobyl. And create a situation where the cooling system that needs to happen constantly there to keep the place from overheating. Now, it's a nuclear power plant. It's not nuclear weapons. But we all know what kind of damage it has done. One of the first things Russia did was disable the cooling that needed to happen because it disabled the electricity of the plant. And people were pretty scared for a while. Then, thankfully, I think within 48 hours, the cooling continued. But they also took over another nuclear plant around Mariupol. And we also know from reports from our CIA that Russia has invested quite heavily in the proliferation of nuclear weapons that are not big H-bombs. So not the kind of bombs that the United States has invested in, but more nimble nuclear weaponry that are at the tip of nuclear missiles. And they have a lot more of them than the United States has. And I really don't think that anybody in their right mind doubts that Putin is ready, willing, and able to use it, to use them if and when he thinks that he ought to. So the fact is that President Zelensky was addressing the world and telling the world that we as a world, not just Ukraine, cannot be caught unawares if Putin decides to use nuclear weapons. We have to be prepared for it now, and it isn't a question just for Ukraine. It is a question for the world. What happens if Russia crosses that red line? What are we going to do about it? So far, Europe is still buying coal from them and still buying gas from them. What is the world going to do if Putin does what had previously thought to be unthinkable in our theory of mad mutually assured destruction, that rational countries would not engage in nuclear warfare on each other? What are we going to do about it? 203-333-9422. Joining us now is Professor Jeffrey Sonnenfeld of the Yale School of Management. Well, one of the things that he's been doing ever since the beginning of this conflict is he has been assembling and publishing a list, which he calls the list. And the list is a list of companies that have either ceased or curtailed doing business with Russia as a result of the Ukraine war. Professor Sonnenfeld joins us again now. We're so happy to have him back on the show. Good morning, Professor. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Lisa. It's great to talk with you again. It's a wonderful honor. I hope you had a good holiday weekend.
Yeah, me too. You too. Did you have your matzah and your maror, Professor?
Yes, we did.
Did you?
We did very well on it all, and unfortunately, being the most immature, I had to ask the four questions.
Oh, come on. You couldn't have been the youngest at your table. No way.
No, just the most emotionally mature. That's all.
Oh, that's hilarious. That's hilarious. That's funny. Okay, so Professor, so tell me about the list. Tell me what prompted you to create it to begin with. What were you thinking?
Well, yeah, it's an amazing thing, Lisa. On this, that the war broke out, as you know, on February 24th was when Putin invaded. And then the companies that moved right away to pull out of Russia were like the last companies that you would have predicted. It was big oil, followed immediately by big tech, which was the device makers, you know, like, you know, Apple, Dell, and IBM and things, and software companies, part of big tech, like Oracle, Akamai, and then the social media companies, Google and others, and Twitter, that they pulled out. It was kind of shocking. And then the professional service firms were the third cluster, accountants and lawyers and, you know, attorneys that usually rather jump off a cliff and get involved in any kind of political conflict, let alone, you know, geopolitical battles. And yet those three were the first movers. So I was involved with some of the CEOs in each one of those three and astounded they made those calls. And then while I'm talking and working with them on how they explain their positions, suddenly all these platoons of PR people came along for the pretenders, companies that were not doing that. They were not pulling out, and they were trying to create a smokescreen. I thought, well, this is just not right. Oh. So I thought, let's list the people that are really doing something, that are really curtailing, pulling out, and those are the frauds. And in creating those two lists, is suddenly I realized that the stock of the companies not pulling out plummeted. When I went on CNBC with that, and the stock plummeted of those companies. The markets were down that day a little bit, but these stocks fell anywhere from 12 to 35%, whereas the market was only down like 3 to 4%. So it was pretty noticeable. And then suddenly those companies all started to reinvent themselves, many of them, to try to create a smokescreen that we're going to put off some investments or this or that. And I realized, oh, legally, I have to create some new categories. So we went from these two categories to five categories. We're a schoolhouse, so that's how we came up with the letter grades, A, B, C, D, and F. If there's one thing we know how to do, especially this time of year, it's that awful grading system. So that's what we went to do, and that's what we got. And then the thing ballooned from those 12 companies to 70 and then 200 by the next week, and now we're at 1,100 companies, if you can imagine, from 169 countries.
So you're at so now your list has letter grades associated with what would an A mean? What is an A grade?
An A is a company that absolutely really pulls out, completely pulls out, and they're not playing games about it. And companies that a B, by contrast, are companies that have not permanently pulled out, but they have suspended. So I'll give you an example. A BP pulled out, the oil company, BP pulled out and left $25 billion on the table that they had to write down of assets that really cost them. By contrast, say McDonald's, which owns all their restaurants or most of the restaurants, like 800 restaurants in Russia, they shut them down temporarily and they're still paying their workers. So that's a B grade. You know, they shut it down, but it's not withdrawing and it's still putting cash into Putin's economy. A C grade is somebody who shut down just a little bit. They shut down some lines, like PepsiCo pulled out, but they're still running a little dairy in there, and that's not so great, Pepsi. And, you know, a D grade is somebody here in Connecticut, I hate to say it, our friends at Subway's, they said, well, we're just, you know, we have a franchise situation. We can't shut them down, but we're going to put off any future investments in there. So that's a D. So there are still Subways operating there, but they're not building new ones. And an F is somebody who says, you know, we don't care. We're just going to dig in and keep doing what we're doing, continue the course. And that's like anybody who buys Angel soft toilet paper or quilted Northern or Brawny towels. That's all part of Georgia Pacific, which is part of Koch, K-O-C-H Industries. And that's an example of an F grade. And they're not too happy about that, by the way.
Wait a minute. You're telling me Koch, which is the most conservative right-wing force for politics in America, which typically is like, you know, when they think that they're right-wing, they're like, America first, America first, America first. They haven't pulled out of Russia?
They are hugely supporting Russia. It's horrible that they are there. And, of course, some Chinese companies like Alibaba and things. Amgen is there. Amgen is run by a friend of mine.
I mean, Alibaba, of course, China and Russia are best friends nowadays. That you would expect. But it's the American companies, Koch Industry, and they're all about, you know, America first in this country. They want everybody to believe they're all about America first.
How about that? Just a little bit of an irony there. There's a big IT software company in the U.S. called Cloudflare. That's there. Cloudflare, it's really helping them do a lot of bad things with propaganda. That's a shame. They shouldn't be there either. And it's pretty discouraging, but you do see a lot of them. International Paper, the big U.S. paper company, has a controlling interest in Russia's largest paper mills, and they pretended that it wasn't true. We had to show them, in fact, even their own management is running the paper mills there. So it's just really terrible.
I'm looking at your list on the F's. Carter's Oshkosh is also an F. You say they're still operating.
Shouldn't be there. Wouldn't you expect better of them? You know, all that kid stuff, kids clothing and all. I tell you, the D's are not a lot better. There are a lot of D's that people would recognize that are came up with a certain kind of a smoke screen, if you will, because they did something that isn't a superficial kind of stuff by saying they're just going to put off this future investment. Like I mentioned, Subways, Subways could cut off IT and advertising and training and things and not support their franchises there. Or they could do what Starbucks did, which is to buy them out. Even if they don't own them, buy them back and shut them down.
Is that what they did, Starbucks? Really?
Starbucks, yeah, it's amazing. Unfortunately, the CEO who did that got fired right afterwards, but he did do it. So hopefully it was not related to that.
He bought them out. So, in other words, a one-time infusion of cash, but then you're done. Then you're done because then you don't punish
them,
the people.
Paying them to suspend. So it was a pretty impressive move.
Well, let me ask you something. We're chatting with Professor Jeffrey Sonnenfeld, who created the list of Yale School of Management. Professor, when you spoke originally with the CEOs of these big companies that originally pulled out, why did they say they were pulling out of Russia? Why did they get involved with this conflict?
Well, you know, whether or not it was the truth, they all said it was through humanitarian outrage for the mass slaughter that was already beginning and the invasion of the sovereign identity of a free nation not bothering anybody. You got to wonder if there wasn't more. For example, the oil companies, which aren't usually on the leading edge of social change, that they move so fast that they had some prior historic entanglements with these sanctioned Russian oligarchs, and they just wanted to wipe their hands of it and not get drawn into that legal mess. So maybe, you know, they had a self-interested reason in doing it, but so what? Good for them. They got ahead of it. There are plenty of other people, companies who didn't. And the professional service firms, which is bewildering initially that they would do it, because, you know, what do we usually see? So we see the consumer goods, the fashion companies and fragrances and fast foods and apparel makers. They were way late to the initiative. But why did the lawyers and consultants care? It's because they're young people. They count on a lot of their young associates, the research assistants, the young consultants, the young attorneys, accountants, to do a lot of the heavy lifting. And right now, in this sort of post-pandemic, we ever are before post-pandemic, or at least this endemic stage of things where younger people have voice and vote with their feet, that a lot of people within this great resign were threatening, we're out of here. We're ashamed to be working on the wrong side of history. So they weren't worried about customers at these law firms and public outrage of boycotts, and they weren't worried about investors because they're mainly privately held. But it's because of the internal voices of employees that they listened to So I think that had a lot to do with it there. In terms of big tech, I think they moved quickly because, as we know, they've been under so much congressional scrutiny and public outrage over privacy issues and hate speech and things like that, that they thought, you know, maybe this time we can get ahead of it and do it right. So good for them.
It's extraordinary, really. Yeah, I'm thinking about Deloitte, McKinsey, KPMG, the big ones. They depend on human capital, and they have to have the 20-somethings and the 30-somethings go to work very energetically. You're right. They cannot afford within their ranks to have rebellion, or they won't get the best and the brightest out of college. They won't get them.
No, that's exactly right. Like, we Woodstockers, or at least I am, sort of that baby boom generation, used to talk about those things. We didn't always, you know, live what we said. We didn't always walk the talk. I don't know how long it'll last, but this Gen Z population, that generational cohort, really does live that way. Where they buy, you know, where they shop, where they invest their money, and of course, where they choose to work has a lot to do with the social image of the company, the political social image of the company. If they think it's a shameful place, then the reputation has great cost to those employers.
So, Professor Sonnenfeld, we're chatting with Jeffrey Sonnenfeld of the Yale School of Management. Can you tell how many people are interested in looking at your list? As it has expanded, has it had greater impact, lesser impact? Are people shrugging their shoulders now? What do you think?
We've had about 2,000, believe it or not, 2,000 major media hits that drives about 70,000 unique views every single day. So we've had to our site, I'm amazed at these statistics. We don't want to crash Yale's servers over this, but we've had about 3 million unique viewers to check out this list. So that's, you know, if you take a look at repeats, we're somewhere around 60 or 70 million people have been going to this the site, which is remarkable because we keep updating it. Initially, it was just a handful of us, but now we've grown to about 30 people with backgrounds in economics and financial analysis and strategic analysis and corporate governance and people who speak, you know, 12 different languages. We have to be when some companies, believe it or not, don't tell us the truth.
We
start to hear from Mondelez and Hershey's. Oh, we're just doing fundamental nutritional stuff. We're finding there was factories making Oreos in Russia and making Kit Kats and Cadbury chocolates and Nesquik with these companies. That's hardly nutritional essentials. And even if they were, who would care? Is that Gandhi said we need to, even block the roads from ambulances to have a complete shutdown of civil society. And, you know, shame on me, Lisa. I should have told you the whole purpose of this, by the way, is not just to inflict hardship on the Russian population for no reason, but it is to inflict hardship on the Russian population. There was a great book that perhaps only you might remember called Hitler's Willing Executioners in 1996. Jacob Goldhammer was the guy who wrote it.
I do remember that book.
A Dutch historian. It showed that the triumph of the Third Reich wasn't just because of this wicked Adolf Hitler. It was because of the German population's complicity by their complacency. The Russians are allowing this to happen by identifying, by shutting down civil society. We strip away this power base of Putin to look like he's this all-powerful totalitarian, and it shows every average Russian, this guy's not as much in control as you think. That this is already 25% of the Russian economy, and the companies that you're looking at on that list, apart from any government sanctions, it worked in South Africa. For apartheid is what got rid of Nicolae Ceausescu in Romania and Erich Honecker in East Germany and Jaruzelski in Poland. We have seen that these sanctions working with these voluntary, completely voluntary business boycotts can be very successful because it gets past the propaganda. Symbolically and substantively, it makes a big difference.
So, Dr. Sonnenfeld, we're chatting with Jeffrey Sonnenfeld. I have a question for you since you're an economics guy and you're at the Yale School of Management. I read this morning that it is anticipated that Russia is going to default in its obligations for the first time since the Bolshevik Revolution in 1918. What does that mean to the world's economy? Can we expect a lot more inflation in the American dollar, some short-term hurt for this? And what is that about? Can you explain it?
It would have if this was China, it would have a big impact on us. For Russia, no. The devastation of this is going to be catastrophic for the Russian economy, because it will make Russia uninvestable, that pension funds, private equity funds, banks cannot cannot loan into Russia. Already, believe it or not, you know, we see Xi Jinping, by the way, equivocating, but somewhat, you know, but leaning towards the Russians, which is horrifying for China. But interestingly, a lot of major Chinese financial institutions that are state-run already suspected that would be a problem, that China would be under, that Russia would be unable to pay their bills. So the Bank of China had cut off all credit for China, for Russia, a month ago. And
really?
Something called ICBC, which is one of the biggest banks in the world, another Chinese bank, cut off all credit to Russia. Another Chinese major financial institution called the Asia Infrastructure Bank cut off all support for Russia. And some major energy companies, like one of them called Sinopec, another one called Sinochem, have cut off support for Russia, which is pretty amazing, because we still have Western oil services companies working with Russia, like Schlumberger. Schlumberger, by the way, which was in its biggest and best years, run by a Holocaust survivor from Buchenwald. And he would roll over in his grave if he knew that Schlumberger was working with the Russians right now. Similarly, Arch there are some other, you know, horrific companies. Baker Hughes is another one that should not be working with the Russians, but still is in oil services. And of course, Halliburton is also working with the Russians and shouldn't be. They sort of modestly curtailed things, but they get a D rating, which is not that much better. So, but it an inability to pay their bills will make it very hard. They're increasingly, financiers have to learn the lesson, Lisa, that they need to invest where there is the rule of law and not the law of rulers, just out of self-interest. If people are going to, you know, cancel their debt obligations, how could you possibly put other people's money in there?
I see. Okay, so if they default on their obligations, who is left holding the bag? Is it U.S. institutions that loan to Russia? Who loaned to Russia? Okay.
Yeah, but they, in most cases, it's not that big an exposure, happily, and they've been clearing out of there. We've seen some major financial institutions, I think it was Morgan Stanley and some others, have just been buying some very cheap Russian debt, which was not smart, because now they won't even get, even though it was cheap to buy it, it's not cheap if it's worth nothing.
That's true. That's true. They were trying to make a fast buck. So speculating. That's what they do.
Exactly right.
They were hoping the war would be over by now.
I should be interviewing you. You have it exactly right. You must be an economist, too. That's exactly what they were betting on. They were betting it's exactly right. They're betting a resolution. Frankly, you wonder, how can McDonald's now still be paying their employees to do nothing, which is what they're doing? 60,000 people. So they're making a similar bet that it would have been over by now. But they had no idea. When you look at Buka and what was done with the mass devastation, you know, these moms with their babies in their arms waiting in line for bread being machine gunned, or these elderly folks trying to escape during one of 9 ceasefires the Russians violate that get machine gunned, or these missiles and, of course, bombs into train stations or hospitals and children's hospitals and orphanages where the kids' heads are lopped off in front of their caregivers before they too are killed. And that's after their parents were killed. I mean, this is unspeakable horror. We had General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, with us recently in one of our CEO forums, and he said this is the most dangerous man who's ever lived, ever walked the earth. Sure, Adolf Hitler and Genghis Khan were bloodier, but give this guy time. He can get there. And furthermore, this guy, unlike those other evil villains, didn't have nuclear weapons and bottomless pit of this energy. You're right.
Yeah, he has it. Unbelievable with the nuclear weapons. That's why I opened with Zelensky warning the world. I don't think that anybody looking at what's happening here would say that warning isn't warranted. I mean, he's going to use at some point nuclear weapons because he's going to be cornered, and he's going to risk it all so as to save face and not lose. That's what he's going
Absolutely
to do.
Right. We cannot trust this guy at all. And I'm not sure how long we can stay out of this, but it's just a matter of time. I think it's he's got to be taken out. There's just no alternative. It's one of these rare times I agree with Lindsey Graham. Maybe he shouldn't have said it. It shouldn't be official government policy. But somehow inside his own government, somebody has to come to the realization that this guy is wicked and evil. He's destroying Russia. When Russia how can Russians not see that their country has now become a rogue nation? This is not the U.S. in support of some, you know, supposedly a neo-Nazi regime led by a Jew, of course, running Ukraine.
Right.
No, they got to see that that's nonsense. How could they believe that? With there's no alternative press, no opposition candidates. Anybody who challenges the regime is either killed or put in prison.
Sorry.
They know that. And they know that they're cut off and all these brands disappear. Now, I will say in the defense of some of these brands that lingered, just because the apparel companies and consumer goods, why did they stay for a little while? They caught up in this time warp in their minds. Remember that perestroika spirit of 1990 when the Soviet Union fell? Is we all thought that these Western brands represented a refutation, a disdain for the old Soviet repression, that these were brands of liberation, McDonald's and Levi Strauss and Coke and Pepsi and all that represented freedom. And there were people writing foolish things in the New York Times, like Tom Friedman, saying that no two countries with a McDonald's would ever go to war with each other. Who knows what he was talking about? Because it wasn't true in Africa at that time. It wasn't true in the carnage in Europe at that time. And yet Friedman was writing that stuff, and you'd see people repeating it. But you just look at this situation. There were 130 McDonald's in Ukraine and 860 McDonald's in Russia. The lack of fast food it was hardly the source of the problem.
Right. Jeffrey Sonnenfeld, thank you so much. Yale School of Management, it's called The List. You can find it with any easy Google search, and there are a ton of companies now, and you can see what kind of grade they've gotten in terms of their exposure in Russia and their willingness to withdraw from Russia. Thank you so much, Dr. Sonnenfeld, for coming back on the show. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Amanda. Thank you.
Pleasure. We'll be right back.